The holidays are all about sharing with family. Meals, couches, stories, grandma's secret pecan pie recipe. And now, you can also share a cart with Instacart's family carts. Everyone can add what they want to one group cart from wherever they are. So you don't have to go from room to room to find out who wants cranberry sauce, or who should get mini marshmallows for the yams, or collecting votes for sugar cookies versus shortbread. Just share a cart and then share the meals and the moments. Download the Instacart app and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Plus, enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
This time it's all on the line.
Gabriel with a snap from under center, rolling to his left. Wants to keep, now wants to throw, get him open. In the end zone, touchdown, Terrence Ferguson was behind everybody. I thought Gabriel was going to run it. He really sold that because the Huskies just did not stay back.
This is a Big Ten Championship Week edition of Dirt and Spray.
Brought to you by Mods PDX. The future of building is here. Online at modspdx.com.
Dirt and Spray on the Odyssey app and 1080.
I think it's unique to be able to get talent to play together the way that our guys play.
The Fan.
All right, welcome back in. Hour two. Dirt and Spray on the Fan. The Odyssey app. 99.5 HD2 and YouTube.com/1080AM The Fan. We have a lot to get to in the second hour of the program. There was a legendary football coach who yesterday we found out reportedly interviewed for a vacant college football job.
That he did.
Wow. You know, I heard a lot about how old Joe Biden was. We can't have an old president. And then we elected a 78-year-old man, and I thought, did we care about age, or was that just one side of age?
Okay. Yeah, just one side of age.
North Carolina hiring Belichick is fascinating.
On the heels of Mac Brown being their head coach.
I don't know if that was a mutual beneficial report, like, hey, let us say we interviewed you so we look really good, and then, like, your name will be out as a job interviewee, and so other teams will get a little jealous.
Look at that. People are interviewing Belichick. I can't believe it.
Hard to get a lot of people at conference title games, so we're going to go to Chapel Hill. I want to know if they're really going to hire Bill Belichick.
I am praying that it happens, man. Can we somehow... I want Deion to stay at Colorado, give me Belichick at North Carolina, and give me a North Carolina-Colorado bowl game. Or a non-conference game. Or
Deion versus
Deion
Belichick.
Deion versus
like
Belichick,
that.
Yes. Make college football more interesting. Belichick would definitely do that.
Is that the Lions-Bills Super Bowl that we want?
Yeah. Who do you root for in that game, Belichick or Deion?
Somebody had hit us up on Blue Sky and basically had said, now, after all this talk, imagine Kansas City steamrolls Buffalo and Detroit, wins the Super Bowl. And I said, I think I might quit the NFL if they win again.
It's going to happen, man. Just brace yourself.
I am.
They're going to win it again. Nobody can beat them.
We'll hear from Dan Lanning in a minute. I was thinking about something you said at the end of hour one, and we'll get to some of the other conference championship games as well. Obviously, a big slate of college football this weekend. We'll dabble in the NFL. We'll Sprague the Line as well.
Yes.
Get the Sprague the Line sponsors into the Vancouver Ford text line at 503-864-6326. They treat you right before, during, and after the sale. Visit them at VancouverFord.com. One reason I have a hard time seeing Penn State, and I was disappointed in you yesterday, by the way.
What did I do yesterday?
You didn't do your big pee-pee.
I know, we'll get to it today, because it's only one game. It's not really a full segment.
I disagree.
Segment.
You need to sub the big pee-pee out, call it the big pee-pee. We need to do conference championship game big
pee-pees. You want to do all the games?
Yeah, why not?
Oh, okay,
it's
we could do that.
Conference title game weekend.
All right, I'm okay with that.
I have a hard time seeing Oregon lose. Carter's amazing, right? Singleton, Warren, like, we've heard all of this all week. I have a hard time seeing Oregon lose because I just cannot see in my brain Drew Aller being awesome and beating Oregon.
Yeah.
And hold it for Monday, because come Monday, maybe Aller throws 330, two tuts, no picks, he's efficient. And I'm sitting here going, well, that was the best game I've ever seen Drew Aller play. Even in their comeback win against USC, he had three picks.
He
was awful in that game. That was the Tyler Warren game. And so I cannot in good conscience say that I think Penn State wins, because I just cannot see their quarterback being stellar and awesome in this game. I haven't really seen it almost ever. He's been good. I don't know if I can say I've ever seen him be great. And I just don't see that happening this weekend.
Yeah, the two ranked games that they played this year, they beat Illinois 21-7 and obviously lost to Ohio State at home. In those two games, now they were a little banged up at running back going into the Ohio State game. So to be fair to him there, he was 12 of 20 for 146 yards and a pick against Ohio State. And against Illinois, he was 15 of 21 for 135 yards. And so the numbers
you
don't
see
really.
His Michigan box score last year.
Go pull that. I mean, he was, I remember, not very good. Michigan ran the ball like 74 straight times in the second half of that game in order to win. And Michigan could do that to a lot of folks. They were a dominant team, and they went on to win a national championship last year. It's funny that you mentioned Aller, because one of the reasons that there's a quiet confidence for me going into this game, it's not necessarily just Aller, although that is a part of the equation for me. These are the kind of games and why I got so excited when you brought in Dylan Gabriel. I made the comment earlier this year that there's not a quarterback in a big game that I would rather have than Gabriel. Now, you want to throw like a Cam Ward at me, that's fine. He's not playing any more big games. They're not going to a conference title game. They're not going to the playoffs. He's done playing big games. If I look at the collection of guys who are alive in conference titles and in the playoff race, there's not a quarterback in the country that I would rather have leading my team than him.
He's the best in this?
To me, he is a gamer. He comes up with clutch throws. He comes up with clutch plays. You can replay the Ohio State game in your mind a ton of times, and all the big throws that he made in that game, the big run late in that game in order to give him a go-ahead touchdown on the zone read where he kept it and totally caught Ohio State's defense off guard. He has moments where I think against lesser opponents, he makes throws or plays that you think, what the hell, what were you doing there? But he hasn't had one of those throws or plays in a while now. And when they've needed him to be at his best in big-time situations, whether it's to a 4th-and-9 on the road at Wisconsin, whether it was the entire game against Ohio State, whether it's you're in a dogfight against Boise and you need to put together a drive, he has done it and answered the bell every single time. And so part of the reason that I am confident in Oregon this weekend, yes, is that I think Aller is a good quarterback. I don't know how he is viewed as an NFL guy. He's big body, strong arm, and all that. I know they're not elite on the outside, so maybe it translates to the NFL level for him. There's just a confidence in what Dylan Gabriel can bring, and I think it's a massive advantage for Oregon in this game this weekend.
Well, he was the number one quarterback. Penn State grabbed him. He started as a freshman. This is year three, and he's thrown for 2,600 yards, 18 tuds, 5 picks. By the way,
I don't believe he started as a freshman. I think they played him.
Well, he came in eventually.
Yeah, they kind of gave him some minutes and some snaps here or there.
He threw for 70 yards against Michigan last year.
Yeah, and Michigan had dominant defense.
No, I know, but
yes.
You have to comp Oregon to it, and not that they'll win it the way Michigan won it.
Yep.
And, you know, certainly the expanded playoffs is going to change some of this, but you just have to look at the talent profile and say, like, Oregon may not be as good as that Michigan team was, but talent-wise, comping what Penn State faces on a regular basis, this is as close as they get. And that was last year, so maybe this year he'll prove us wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Aller has a thing to me where it's a lot of like 180, one touchdown, one pick, 51 completion percentage. Like,
yeah.
That's just kind of what I see in my brain with Drew Aller.
Not taking over a game and dominating.
Well, like that Michigan final was 24-15. I feel like it's going to be kind of similar, maybe 27-15, just something kind of weird. A lot of field goals for Penn State.
Low scoring. Their defense is good. It's going to be a low scoring game.
Good. Yeah. But like if Oregon get to 24-27, I won't bat an eye at that.
You feel good about winning if you get to that number.
I would actually not even just use Ohio State as your Gabriel reason, right? Like Gabriel, I'm going through this. The Cam Ward one's funny, and it's not that he's not good. We know he's great. I don't know how many games we have evidence to put Cam Ward in this conversation of the big game stuff. He had a couple upsets at Washington State, but
yeah,
other than that,
it's a smaller sample size.
You go through the playoff quarterbacks that are potentially looming in the playoff, and I don't think I can disagree with you. Maybe people think Quinn Ewers, if they beat Georgia this weekend, is one of those.
He hasn't been very good this year. Beck and Ewers came in higher rated than Gabriel did,
certainly.
But both of them have had very disappointing seasons.
But the game I would actually highlight is Wisconsin. where their offense sucked. That was Wisconsin had pulled them down into a style of football they wanted them to play.
Yeah, no Tez.
And even in the game where they're not playing well, there's no Tez Johnson. You know, Ferguson's banged up a little bit in that game. 4th and 9. That's the play you highlight, right? Like Ohio State, he obviously made some big throws. They moved the ball down the field. The explosive plays were going. I point to the Wisconsin game because that might be what one of the playoff games is. Good team faces you. You're struggling a little bit. Your defense is keeping you in it. It's a low, very low scoring affair. Now it's a pivotal 4th and 7. Does Lanning want to try a 53-yarder? Does he want to punt? Does he want to go for it? Well, I got Dylan Gabriel. And even when my offense is struggling, he can roll out. Boom, 4th and 9, pick up. There you go, Terrence Ferguson. Move the chains. There's not a lot of quarterbacks in this playoff conversation that I don't know you point to and say, that's right there. Ohio State's a great win. The Wisconsin game is what I'd highlight because when they needed to make the play,
yeah,
they seemingly made the play, whether that's with Gabriel or the offensive line in the run game.
Yeah, I think one of the keys for both quarterbacks, probably more so Penn State, just because of this conversation that we're having, is their ability to run the ball on early downs and not put Drew Aller in situations where I genuinely believe Oregon has one of the best pass rushes in the country. They're coming off a game with 10 sacks. They're loaded on the defensive line. That's been the case for them all year, and they can come at you in waves, and they can come at you in different ways. Penn State has a question mark at right tackle. The right tackle's been out, I think, for a chunk of the year, banged up, so they've been kind of rotating bodies at that position. That is a major weakness for them. And if you make Drew Aller live in a lot of 3rd and 6 and 3rd and 7 situations, I love Oregon's chances to win this game. But it comes down to Singleton and Allen are two really good backs. Singleton on the year is averaging over 6 yards a carry. Allen's over 4.
Goes under the radar.
Under the radar. They got a two-headed monster at running back that Ohio State was able to stymie those guys. Now, I believe they were both a little banged up going into the game and they feel healthier now, but Ohio State was able to basically take away Penn State's run game, and that made Drew Aller really uncomfortable. And then you put him in passing situations where essentially they have one target. I mean, if we're being fair to Penn State, Tyler Warren is one of the best weapons in the country, might be the best player in all of college football. That guy's a beast. They can line him up in a million different ways. That's the one guy you got to circle and stop. Outside of him, there's nobody that really scares you in Penn State's passing game. And so if you can force them to live in obvious passing situations and say, okay, let's bracket Tyler Warren and try and take him out. Somebody else beat us one-on-one. Nico Reed, Jabbar Muhammad, you're going to go one-on-one against wide receivers that you should be able to slow down. That's where Oregon's defense wants to live. But if you let them keep getting downhill and it's 3rd and 2, 3rd and 1, 3rd and 3 the entire game, they have the threat of being balanced on 3rd down. That's when it becomes far more challenging, because then they could just line up Tyler Warren and the Wildcat, fall forward for 2 yards, and you're picking up 1st downs.
Hugely physical game is what we know we're going to see on Saturday. Catron Allen in early November was asked, hey, what kind of style of play do you like? And he said, quote, I prefer running through somebody. And I cannot wait to watch these two. I don't know.
It's going to be a slobanaka. Is that what you're telling me?
There's a physical nature. Penn State, yep, we know is physical. They just haven't proven they're physical enough to beat the other very physical teams.
Yeah.
And largely that's just been Ohio State, Michigan in that conference. Well, here comes Oregon now, undefeated. They've got debatably the best defensive front in that conference, if not the best defensive front in that conference, with Birch, Harmon, Uwe Ungalale. Like, that is a stout group. Penn State, they talk a big game. They love the physicality. I cannot wait to watch this, because is Oregon going to be Ohio State, Michigan for Penn State again? I think a lot of Duck fans would say, yes, we already are.
Uh-huh.
And I can't really disagree with the thought. But this is a little bit of like, Penn State hasn't experienced it yet. They've experienced Ohio State. They've experienced Michigan. Oregon, Penn State have not played since the mid-90s. And now you've got two coaches, one of which is hyper-aggressive and a psycho, and the other one is a good coach, but largely cannot beat teams like this. Let's hear from Dan Lanning on the other side. He was on with Primetime yesterday. We'll get some Dan Lanning stuff. We got Andrew Jones, who covers North Carolina for their Rivals website. Is Bill Belichick going to be in Chapel Hill? And then we'll dive into the other conference championship games. We got Sprague the Line at 8:30, a little NFL, Dirt and Sprague back with more with Dan Lanning Audio next on The Fan. All right, welcome back in. Andrew Jones covers North Carolina for Heels Illustrated. Are they going to hire Bill Belichick?
He should also be in the Hall of Fame. What are we doing?
Who?
Oh, wait, different Andrew Jones. Sorry. I don't know if you got Braves Andrew Jones on me. I don't know which Andrew Jones we're going with here at 7:30.
I think this is his last year on the ballot.
This is it, like this upcoming ballot, whenever it is.
But they did this to my guy Fred McGriff. He never got voted in, and then eventually they do that like
player
veterans committee.
Yeah. Veterans committee gets you in, and now McGriff is like this may be what Andrew Jones is.
Well, McGriff wasn't fair. That was an old school. He was seven short of 500
he was
home
three.
Runs, so we're not.
He was three.
Was he really?
497.
I thought he was 493. That's
why
crazy.
Didn't he go Bernie Mac, Mr. 3000, and just
he
like
tried.
Can we just sign this guy for 2 weeks until he hits three home runs?
He tried
in a blowout game. Let him hit like a fly ball into the outfield. Let it fall. Let him run around the bases. Give him an inside the park home run. The guy deserves it.
You don't need to get me on a rant about Braves propaganda because I'll do it. Andrew Jones is not, without a doubt, he is a major league baseball Hall of Famer.
Yes, he is.
You cannot win 10 straight gold gloves and debatably be the best defensive center fielder of all time and not be in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
I know what you're going to say.
I'll let you go. I'll let you rant.
I digress.
He's cooking right now. Let him finish.
Let me cook. 213 career average. We'll spray the line at 8:30, so about an hour from now, we'll get to it. Dirt is 0-0-1.
Hey, a tie feels like a win for me right now, baby. We're off to a good start this week. I didn't lose any money last night. Progress.
It's a good poll question.
Yes.
Are you having a bad year when a tie feels like a win in gambling?
Yes.
Yes, you are.
Yes, it does. It feels great, man.
Dan Lanning, who we mentioned yesterday, just seemed beat, you know?
It's a long week. The calendar makes no sense. Having signing day the week of conference title games is one of the dumbest things you could possibly do.
There's usually great conversation every week, but he just yesterday, he sounded exhausted.
They did. He did have a funny moment where Rob asked him.
The quarterback
thing. Yeah. And he was like, you want me to put Dylan Gabriel in there on defense? He was like, well, they never see that coming.
Well, and then I heard it as quarterback again when he said your defensive quarterback, but
yes.
He may have been saying cornerback. Lanning heard him like, I guess we're just
I think
getting...
he was trying to say coordinator. I don't know if I've ever heard somebody call a defensive coordinator the quarterback of your defense.
I didn't know if he was talking about Bassa or anyways, I digress. Lanning heard it the other way again and was like, well, what are we doing?
Yeah.
You know, he just seemed tired.
He did.
But Lanning was talking about it. You can find the podcast, of course, at 1080thefan.com. He was asked about Penn State.
There's not a lot of teams that what they do offensively is very unique and different. So I don't think we see anybody this year that looked quite like them. Just a variety of formations, how they utilize their personnel. It's a little bit different.
We've also talked about Carter on the defensive line, Singleton coming back at the running back position. Tyler Warren is, you know, just an absolute stud.
Mm-hmm.
They asked Dan Lanning about scheming against specific players. I believe this was the question. Basically, do you bracket somebody over a Tyler Warren and you don't just single him out specifically, but in a way you kind of do. And they asked Lanning about that.
Well, I think you always want to be aware of where people are at when you talk about a team's strengths. What makes it harder about how Penn State does it is that guy plays so many different positions and moves around the field. So you can't just say, okay, I'm going to line up my best corner on Tyler Warren. Well, then he's lined up the next play at running back or quarterback in the backfield and catching a snap. Like, so this doesn't work like that. And that's probably what makes them more challenging is that they move their personnel around a lot.
If Penn State and Aller are struggling, I really hope there's a play that Franklin has where Tyler Warren snaps it to himself.
Throws it to himself.
Throws it in the air like we used to do as little kids.
Backyard. Here we go.
Runs under it. Oh, my God. He's going to
run a fade. Tyler, run a fade. He's going to make a play.
How many touchdowns did you throw to yourself?
Oh, millions.
From ages 8 to 10, either in the street or in your backyard. Probably like 50 a season, right?
Dominant. There's nobody better backyard football than me.
Nobody
dominant performances.
Spiral to myself.
No, just everything was right on the money. Diving catches, never dropped the ball. Dominance.
I really do believe this. We'll have to see what the box score will tell us on Saturday, but I cannot imagine a world where Taj Lapoy and Dan Lanning and that defensive group limit him. Stop him? Probably not. Now, if he has a big game, like that won't shock me either because he's the stud. But I just think if you kind of take that away, they don't have a whole lot offensively that is really troubling for Oregon, at least on paper. And
it's
what
not
we've
like
seen.
Ohio State where it's Jeremiah Smith and all these
Egbuka
and Henderson,
Tate and
Junkins. Yeah.
Yes, there's not like that laundry list of guys.
Weapons up and down the field. I think it goes back to, though, him mentioning how you stop Warren, what I was talking about in the last segment, and that is when you allow them to be multiple in terms of what they can call, that's when it's really difficult because he's incredibly talented. And so if they're in a lot of third and two situations, are you going to toss it to him? Are you going to run a little tight end screen? Are you going to line him up at the Wildcat? Are you going to hand the ball off to him? Like, you can use him in so many different ways, and they do use him in so many different ways
that's where it's really incumbent on Oregon's defense to force them into those third and seven, third and eight situations, because then you're not running Wildcat with Tyler Warren on third and eight, right? Like, they're going to try and throw him the ball. That's fine, but he's lined up somewhere. I can have a linebacker on him. I can have a safety bracketing him, and that makes it a little more challenging to get him the football, and then it's one-on-one on the outside, and you love those matchups with your corners in those spots. Lanning talked about this yesterday, too. And it's, look, it's a blanket statement that you could write on any football game, but the big ones, it especially matters in terms of momentums and swings. Explosive plays are huge. And when Penn State has gotten into these games, you mentioned the Michigan game last year and what Aller did. Explosive plays are basically categorized as gains of 20 yards or more.
Yes.
On one play.
Yes.
You know how many explosive plays the Penn State offense had against Michigan last year?
Well, I mean, based on Aller's box score, I'd say zero.
They had one. Catron Allen had a 34-yard run. That was the only one. Their longest reception of the game was a Tyler Warren throw of 19 yards. That was it. Mm. Against Ohio State earlier this year when they lost 20-13 without scoring an offensive touchdown. Remember, their touchdown was a pick six that Will Howard threw. They had a total of three. Tyler Warren had a long run that set him up on that goal line stand. Remember that 33-yarder that set him up like inside the five-yard line? Tyler Warren also had a 31-yard catch, and then Harrison Wallace had a 24-yard catch. They had three explosive plays the entire game. And so that is one of those advantages in an area that the Oregon offense has been able to live in big games, whether it's Dylan Gabriel throwing a little, you know, slant to Tez Johnson, and he takes it 25 yards, or some of the deep shots down the field, or Jordan James breaking a run. I think they have a real big advantage in that category, and I think that's the one thing you want to keep you want to hold Penn State accountable there, because they have really struggled to create explosive plays in big games over the last couple of years. So don't let them have these big chunk plays offensively.
Speaking of big explosive plays, in just the 20 yard minimal criteria for explosive plays, Penn State has one more than Oregon on the season.
Interesting.
44-43. Everything else, Oregon obliterates them. 30 yards, they've got seven more. 40 yeah. yards, they've got four more. 50 yards, they got two more. 60 yards, they've got four more. 4-0, by right. the way. So,
and I would point to the biggest game that they played and the advantage there. How many 20-yard gains did Oregon have against Ohio State in that matchup?
Oh,
how many
huge.
Bombs down the
yes.
field? It completely swung the game, and Penn State could not do it against an elite
Stewart
defense.
Stewart had, what, two touchdowns in that game?
And Tez had a bomb touchdown. Yep. Gabriel had a 30-yard touchdown run. They created explosives left and right.
And then you go just 10-plus yards, Oregon has eight more on the year. So just picking up a first down, which doesn't count as explosive, but that's still, you pick up 10 yards, you're moving the chains, you're feeling good about it. So largely, Oregon is far more explosive just on the year, and I think some of that is, you know, maybe scheduling opponents, all that. Well, not that Oregon's schedule was brutal, but
Tyler Warren had about 20 of those himself against USC, man.
he did.
It was a walking explosive play every snap against the Trojans.
Well, and I know Michigan's down. Michigan just beat Ohio State in Ohio State. You know who played Michigan and didn't play Michigan? So, like, you know, we're splitting hairs on schedule stuff, because
sure.
I don't think Oregon's schedule was all that difficult, but they did face Michigan, and so that's going to count for some. Let's take a break from this. We'll pause Big Ten title game talk. We've done a lot of it. We talked about it all week. We'll Sprague the line an hour from now. We'll get to the other conference championship games this weekend. Coming up next, how do you upgrade from a 24-year-old? Maybe you go to an 18-year-old. And is Bill Belichick really interviewing for North Carolina because he's tired of the Manning cast? Andrew Jones covers North Carolina. We're going to go to Chapel Hill and get his thoughts in the ACC title game. So we'll go there next. Daily Ticker on the Fan.
In this wide world of sports, some stories can slip through the cracks.
Now, before we do this, let's go over the ground rules.
Pelican Brewing presents the Daily Ticker, where Dirt and Sprague hit the big stories you've heard about. And some you haven't.
How'd you do that? Actually, I'm not even mad. It's amazing.
The Daily Ticker with Dirt and Spray is poured by Pelican Brewing. Celebrate the season with a Northwest tradition. Bad Santa Cascadian Dark Ale. Pelican Brewing, born at the beach.
You better watch out, because Bad Santa's coming to town. Today's Daily Ticker brought to you by Pelican Brewing. Celebrate the season with Bad Santa Cascadian Dark Ale. Here we are yesterday, all locked into conference championship weekend. Oregon's playing against Penn State tomorrow night, Big Ten title, Georgia-Texas rematch. Dabo could find his way into the playoff.
Mountain West won tonight.
Mountain West,
about.
The winner's going to the... All of this is happening. We're all glued to this in college football. And then out of nowhere, you hear the glass break like it's Stone Cold Steve Austin. It's like, is that Bill Belichick's music? I think I hear Bill Belichick's music. He reportedly interviewed with the Carolina Tar Heels. And let's go to Carolina now. Heel Illustrated, Andrew Jones. Andrew, good morning to you. How surprised were you with this news? Like, how are people reacting out there in Tar Heel country that Bill Belichick interviewed for the job?
Well, I found out that there were, on Sunday, that there were four members of the Board of Trustees that were pushing for him. And the irony, guys, is that three of them wanted Mac out because he was too old, the game had passed him by, and the changing landscape. And then all of a sudden there's this shiny toy called Bill Belichick. They think, why the hell not? So Bubba Cunningham, the athletic director at North Carolina, is not going about this solo as he's done in the past. It's such a big hire. It's such an important time for North Carolina football, for all college football. And there's a new chancellor, and they wanted more people to be involved. Well, that's the kind of input he's getting from some of the people that are involved. I think the interview, and I was told Monday that there probably would be some kind of Zoom interview with him, A, to appease those members of the Board of Trustees, because they're also big donors, and B, why not just see what he has to say and see if there, maybe they can glean something from him. What's happened now, and there's sort of a double-edged sword on this, is they've gotten a ton of publicity that someone inside the athletic department told me yesterday, you can't buy that publicity. But it's sort of a double-edged there. Part of it's positive because they're talking about North Carolina football across the nation. Mm-hmm. The negative is people are like, what the hell's going on here? Because they have legitimately quality candidates that they're also talking to, like John Sumrall from Tulane and Matt Campbell, whom I really like, from Iowa State. They're both at the top of the list right now. And then there's Bill Belichick. And it's a head-scratcher. I actually floated the name out there Monday on our message boards to see what people thought, and they thought it was comical. And now that there's a lot of publicity, some are saying, hey, wait a minute, you know, college football's changing. Maybe it could work with this guy. So I think there's a healthy handful of people that are desperate to get good in football here. Yeah.
I think this is a tough thing to balance with an opinion because North Carolina, we've heard this the last couple of weeks when we kind of got wind that Mac might be out. We always heard out west, Andrew, that Arizona State was a sleeping giant. It's been our whole life we've been hearing this, and they've never been good largely. And now Kenny Dillingham's there. It's his dream school. Big 12 championship year two. Okay, maybe that was right. We've heard that same stuff echoed about North Carolina, that that's a really desirable job. The ACC kind of sucks. It's there for the taking. Those candidates you name are great candidates. But also, this is Bill Belichick. Like, he's debatably the GOAT of football in general. So, like, I don't know how you square what's best for the program, because you're right. You go from old to old, so that doesn't change much. But is it better to build with Belichick? Could Belichick recruit? I don't know how to square any of this and what the right decision for a program like that is.
I think it's okay to talk to him because of who he is. And we're at a time now where, for a while there, we had, a 78-year-old and an 81-year-old running for president. So if you can be president, and one guy won, the younger one, who ended up being the older one. So if you can be president, then why can't you coach college football? And I thought it was interesting. Adam Gorney, who's in our network at Rivals.com, wrote a piece yesterday kind of using the Deion model that, hey, Deion recruits like crazy and he doesn't leave campus. Belichick's not going to go into some 16-year-old's home. He's not going to walk the halls of a high school in Oxford, North Carolina, shaking hands and handing out T-shirts or anything like that. You're going to have to go to him. But the thing about it is, the last time that he won a Super Bowl, how old were the kids he's going to recruit? Their parents may be gaga over him, but that doesn't mean that the kids are going to be. And then you have all the NIL stuff that comes into play, which I do think that he would. They're increasing NIL there anyway, and they're going to be fully funded with revenue sharing, so they're not going to be in too bad a shape there. I just think that the old photos that these kids put on Twitter when they visit, with the coach, with the family, and he's pointing at the kid. I don't see Belichick doing any of that stuff. I see him going through about 6 months of that and saying, nah, this is absurd. I'm walking away. And then they're stuck in like June or July and having to promote someone from within. So yeah. I think it would be silly to do. I think it's an interesting conversation. But from my sources, I don't believe it's serious. I don't believe he's a candidate. But just having him involved, Bubba Cunningham could turn around and say, hey, look, we chose Matt Campbell over Bill Belichick and try to sell him a little bit more if they think that they even need to do that. So I think it's an interesting story. I think it's a massive speed bump. And I think they're on the other side of it now.
Well, Dirt, I think the other part of that, too, that Andrew probably already knows is if they hired him, I think we all know he's stealing his kid from UW to be his D coordinator.
Yeah, probably.
Isn't he?
Yeah, bring his kid to be the.
Because that was Washington. Well, that was one of the strengths.
Well, and you mentioned, Andrew, that he maybe not wanted to do the social media stuff with the recruits, and you might be right there. But did you see him on Halloween where he was reeling in his mermaid girlfriend on Instagram? So maybe he's into the social media stuff.
Coeds,
you know?
Watch out.
Well, that's the other storyline. You know, all that he goes to our college campus and look at all the potential talent that he has right there on campus. So. That's been one of the jokes people are floating.
Yeah, who's he really recruiting there, Andrew? Huh? The players or the leaders? Yeah.
Well, you know, they score higher, I think, with the co-eds than they do on the football field. So there's no doubt about that.
That is so true. Oh, but, I love that.
So I'm told, right? I'm married, but I still, you know. Anyway, I don't want to go there.
It's a word on the street, at least.
Yeah, the thing about his son, I guess if you want to try to connect some dots that make a little bit of sense, you bring his son, and maybe he's the coach in waiting, but I don't know. I think that they can do a lot better than that. I honestly think that they have a very legitimate chance to get Matt Campbell. I think that would be a great hire. And Summerall's an up-and-coming guy who's won big time wherever he's been, and he would be a very good hire too, but I do think there's a concern he'd be a job hopper.
Yeah.
Campbell, I can see Campbell coming in at 44 and laying down some roots and staying there for a while and maybe waking up that sleeping giant, because I've joked for years, I've covered North Carolina for a long time, and I've joked for a long time that they've been on snooze. Yeah. And so that sleeping giant's not waking up. He hears something, hits the snooze, and goes back to sleep. And you're kind of right. Arizona State's like that as well. So I don't think Bill Belichick's the guy to wake that up. I mean, it wasn't like he was dominant after Tom Brady left, which is another point some people are making. So it's a lot of fun. It made this week a little bit interesting, but I do think that by Sunday they'll probably announce a new hire, and I believe that coach is coaching this weekend.
Interesting. So last one for you, Andrew. We'll get you out on this. You mentioned those two names, Campbell and Summerall, who will both be very good hires for them and have had a lot of successes. I'm just curious, one, is there any other name on the outside, that outside of those two, that's maybe getting a little bit of murmur or buzz that they're potentially looking at? And then on the snooze button thing, that is so funny because I have looked at North Carolina from all the way out in Oregon and viewed them that way of like, man, the brand, how many colleges have better brand recognition than North Carolina because of Jordan and the baby blue,
the uniforms,
everything that goes with it, like fertile recruiting ground too, right? Like there's really good high school football in North Carolina. So I guess first part, any other names to keep an eye on? And then second, what is the miss? Like, why have they been snoozing so much?
I think they've been snoozing so much because there haven't been great cultures. Yeah. I've kind of surmise that some of the kids that are four stars that want to go there because they think they can get on the field a lot quicker instead of going to a Clemson or a Georgia where it might take a little longer. So they might not be kids that want to battle as much. And therefore, that's kind of explains why North Carolina can have nothing but four stars on defense and suck. Because they're just not that tough sometimes. That's been the biggest issue. Mack Brown cracked that in the 90s. His last two teams at Carolina had arguably the best defense in college football. Had he stayed, I don't think that narrative would be there now. They were waking up. Finally, the Giant was waking up. But he met with the athletic director in late 1997 at a hotel in Atlanta. And the athletic director told him, the football coach will never make more than the basketball coach in North Carolina. And Mack said, adios.
Yeah.
Now, that changes now because Mack makes more than Hubert Davis, and he made more than Roy Williams when Roy Williams had his last couple of years. So I think that that's changed, but that was the opportunity. Not every program has the opportunity to get the right guy. And the right guy that can be a lifer there. It doesn't happen very often. They had that guy and they let him go. He came back to try to resuscitate. He did some good things. But in the end, at 73 now, it's starting to slip away.
Yeah.
And he doesn't have Sam Howard, Drake May throwing the ball around. So you saw really what kind of program he has. And they have to make a change, which makes the Belichick stuff kind of silly because why would you even try that? Go ahead and get somebody that's young and has done this before. Matt Campbell's been a head coach for 13 years, and he's 44 years old.
Yeah.
He's exactly the guy you probably would have wanted to hire 12, 13 years ago if you could. Now you have a chance to do it, and he's got a lot under his belt. And if he can win at Ames, Iowa, he can win at Chapel Hill, because you're right. The talent is in this area, in this region, is outstanding. Atlanta's 6 hours away. Washington, D.C. metro area is 4 hours away north. Within that range, you can win national championships every year with that talent. I mean, Clemson and Georgia have done it.
You could
probably win a national championship just with Charlotte area and Atlanta area talent.
Unbelievable.
Dirk, could you imagine Belichick, who creeped out of a Boston area apartment on a creaky deck on a ring cam, sneaking out of a dorm?
Out of a sorority house. Hey, there goes Bill, man. I think I saw him on the ring camera. Well, our boss is a big dookie, so I'm sure he's driving in just with his blood boiling right now. So it's always fun to revisit that rivalry. Andrew Jones, Heel Illustrated, covering the Tar Heels. Man, that was a lot of fun. Thanks so much for the insight. Hopefully we can do this again soon.
Absolutely. Appreciate having me on, guys.
There you go. Andrew Jones. Great stuff from Tar Heel country.
Hall of Fame hit right there.
That was,
get him in, too.
Dude, that was great. That was really good. He was fun.
I mean, he's not wrong.
No.
And that's what's funny about, like, all that, you know, Belichick the GOAT, give him another chance. I saw a take yesterday from Costas. You'd be an idiot not to hire Bill Belichick. I'm like, would you?
Yeah.
We got to be honest about this stuff, man. All-time legendary coach, the GOAT to many. I totally get it.
The college game is so much different, man.
But are we going to just memory hole what it was the last two years? I mean, those were like, hope we can win 11-8 this weekend.
Well, and like he used the line, the only thing I disagree with a little bit there, and Andrew, like Deion is recruiting fine, and he's mostly portaling his team at Colorado. I like the
comp. Got a little better this year, but yeah.
I mean, they're the 37th ranked recruiting class in the country. They're behind Syracuse and Kansas State.
No, I know.
Duke has a better recruiting class
than
Colorado.
At one point, they were in the 50s this year.
I'm not saying it's not better than where it was. Yeah. Like, I'm not, like, you know, in their past regime, they couldn't recruit to save their lives. But this idea that he's, like, killing it and bringing all these guys in because he's Deion, he's going to portal a ton of guys in, and he signed a couple of big recruits. But they're right there with Iowa and Utah.
Deion also coached high school Jackson State. Like, he kind of built his
groundwork,
and he knew how to coach those level of guys.
Yeah.
Belichick only knows the professional way, and I don't know if that works.
God, it'd be funny, though, wouldn't it? Man, that would be entertaining if he came back and coached college football. The Daily Ticker is always brought to you by our good friends at Pelican Brewing Company. This year, give Santa what he wants. Forget the milk, Paris cookies with the Northwest's favorite festive beer, Bad Santa Cascadian Dark Ale. I'm going to save the juicy matchups for the top of the hour, and we'll get a little bit of a mock big pee-pee in, if you will. We'll spring the line at 8:30. Let's get to one, though, that Sprague says he doesn't care about. Or do you agree with him? We'll dive into that next on The Fan. All right, welcome back in. Before we get to one of the games this weekend, I did want to give you a couple updates on the Beavs.
Oh, yeah? Go Beavers.
There we go.
How about that?
That's what I was looking for. Found it. They got a nice little trend of guys that are saying they're going to stick around next year. Now, what does that mean for next year? I don't know. But Jabari Johnson, the latest one to throw his name into the ring, saying, I will be back for another year at Oregon State.
I was worried about that one.
He said he's returning. I would say Saladin Alab was one of their better young players of the season.
He really came on at the end for them when Hankerson got hurt.
He did. And Hankerson, by the way, we told you yesterday, he already said he's coming back. And now you got both your running backs coming back next year.
I hope that indeed happens. I would assume saying this means some financial stuff happened. And I'll just also add this caveat. A lot of these kids are liars and have no idea what checks are going to come their way in about 2 weeks. So,
yeah,
they might be coming back. And also, if they leave, I won't sit here and go, I can't believe you said he's coming back, not coming back.
We did do that with Damian Martinez last year. He was, at this point, committed and
one of their best running backs
and,
ever. Did this last year, and then he left. And so, you know, teams get desperate. They look around. Hankerson played at Colorado, had a good year. Didn't fit. Came to Oregon State, had a good year. I mean, Jam Griffin was here, left, came back. So, like, I just don't know how concrete any of that is. But so far, it's been encouraging.
Yeah. One of the games this weekend, I want to get to the full slate here coming up top of the hour. We will spread the line at 8:30. You have said that you are not interested in watching this game. And I'm wondering if it's a timing thing or if it's a matchup thing or a team thing. You're out on the ACC title game.
Yes to all three of what you just said.
Everything in the category.
It's going to be 5 o'clock on a Saturday night. And
same time as Oregon and Penn State.
So, like, you know, I don't think I want to do the multi-view on YouTube TV, so I think I'm going to have Oregon alone. My kid uses the iPad because we only let her have the iPad on the weekends, and that might be some Roblox time for her.
Yeah, she's playing with something, so you just go.
Look, am I going to watch it? Yeah, I will. Am I going to miss a couple plays? And you're like, remember that third and eighth play? And I'm like, yeah.
Quit hating on Rhett Lashley over there. What's the matter with you, man?
Coach of the year.
Yes, he was.
How are people excited for that game?
Yeah,
I don't want to say this. It's not a great opinion. I give them all their flowers. It's cool to see in year one.
Nobody wants to watch SMU in the playoff. Nobody's excited about it. Everybody hates Dabo, so nobody wants to see them in the playoff. I don't know, man. I love the conference championship games. I get a big nooner, Big 12. I'm excited about it. I love the idea that Matt Campbell might be his last year, and, like, does he walk off with a Big 10 title game win?
Mm-hmm.
Dillingham in year two got all the way there. Nobody picked him. They were picked dead last in that conference. Then I get the afternoon slate, 1 o'clock SEC. That's beautiful, baby. And then Oregon, Penn State, which I think Oregon will run away with, but I'll give Penn State some benefit there. Of all the games, it's the least interesting. Yeah. I don't care about SMU in any way. I hate Clemson.
The return of the ponies, man. The funny thing is...
You could push me a step further, Dirt. I don't think I can name 6 players total in this. I just don't like the ACC sucks.
Yeah, it's not a good conference.
This is why I kind of wish Miami would have just been gifted into the... At least I would have had Cam Ward on my television.
Yeah, you can hate watch Mario Cristobal. That's at least entertaining. You know they're going to score a lot of points.
I would only hate watch Mario if he made the playoff. I would actually root for him to win the ACC.
To get into the playoff.
Because I'd rather watch Miami in the playoff than SMU or Clemson.
It's funny because I feel like so many people... watched SMU the first couple of weeks of the season. So if you remember back to week zero, they were one of the teams that played on week zero.
That's a hot take because I don't think anybody in America has watched
that's
SMU.
You're true. I'm a sicko. I know. I got problems.
You are a psychopath.
I got issues, okay? They played in week zero. Do you remember who they played in week zero? There was like 4 games that day.
Was it BYU?
There was the Florida State-Georgia Tech game. Remember in Ireland? It was like, oh, yeah. Upset. There was a couple other random ones. They played at Nevada in week zero.
That's right. They almost
lost the game. And they came in with all this hype and like, hey, look at SMU and the ACC. Damn near lost to Nevada in week zero. Mm-hmm. 2 weeks later, they lost at home to BYU, which nobody thought was going to be good this year. And I think everybody around the country, if you saw that game and then the BYU result, was like, I'm not watching SMU.
Then they changed the quarterback.
And then you look up and you're like, wait a minute, they're 7-1. They haven't lost. But they played a bunch of like Stanford games on ESPN Plus or the CW, and nobody's watched them all year. And here they are, 1 win away from the college football playoff.
I heard a sneaky good point. Do you know who screwed Miami maybe the most? Stanford.
How so?
Well, Stanford beat Syracuse and Syracuse early in the year.
Yes.
If they don't win that game, Syracuse is a ranked team, right?
Yeah.
And then who did Miami beat on the road? Louisville. Who beat Louisville at the end of the year on a field goal?
Yeah, Stanford.
If Stanford doesn't win that, Louisville's ranked, so that's a ranked win for Miami.
That's a good point. Syracuse would be 10-2, and Louisville would be 9-3.
And that loss to Syracuse ain't so bad to people, even though they were up 21-0. And so, like, in a weird way, Stanford kind of screwed.
Stanford went 3-9
Miami,
this year.
And they were a bad
3-9.
Football team.
They were terrible this year.
But welcome to the ACC, Stanford.
Yeah, this is what they do. They did it to us.
God,
I'm so glad we don't have to play that stupid team anymore.
I don't largely sit here and do the Colin is right thing. I'm right here. Nobody in America cares about that conference championship game, and nobody wants to see either of those teams in the playoff. And I hate to say this because I was so against it last year. God, I hope SMU loses and Bama leapfrogs them. I don't want to watch SMU.
SEC honk spray coming in off the top rope. What happened to you?
I don't know.
What? You're rooting for a 3-loss SEC team?
The sport broke me, and we've somehow reversed roles.
You're now
on
the zombie
ACC.
Now? Yeah. Yes. You've been eaten by the zombies.
Am I wrong? Do you guys want to watch SMU Clemson? I'm not excited for that
Just
game.
For the irony of it, yeah. I think I said this to you off air after the show yesterday that it is pretty ironic that as soon as SMU comes back into the fray is when. And you can pay players above the table. So, that old guard, like lots of Dallas football money, a lot of old religious money poured into that school. Like,
Oil money
should go for something.
I mean, they're not playing for free, but they basically said, just give us like $2 million ACC and we'll come to your conference because they're being bankrolled by billionaires.
Exactly. Really rich people.
Like, just let us into a power conference. And hey, I can't blame them. They win tomorrow night. It works. They're in the college football playoff. They might be in with a loss, too.
I'd rather watch Scataboo play a playoff team by himself.
Just I mean, 1-11.
Than watching SMU play.
Scataboo is very Do you agree with Sprague? Do you not care at all about the ACC championship
Scataboo
game this weekend?
Scataboo should be in New York, by the way.
He should.
Get totally screwed out of this whole deal. He should. I'm tired of this 3-4 player limit. It should be 7 guys.
Yeah.
Scataboo absolutely should at least be in a nice tuxedo.
Yes, he should.
With some chest pubes flowing out of the top of it.
Give me the backstory, him playing the piano. I want that from Scataboo.
You know, his brother was older and used to beat up on him, but he took pride in those beatings, and now he applies them every Saturday. I'm like, yeah, hell yeah, he does.
Now he's going to give it to Iowa State maybe tomorrow. We'll get to the rest of conference championship week. Spring in the line coming up at 8:30. It's Loaded Football Friday, final hour next on The Fam.